I was visiting my parents out at Cowra and got a phone call probably only a few hours after the bomb went off, and was asked, you know, am I okay to travel over there?
And how did you feel about the prospect of going to cover something like that?
Look, at the time, you see the news reports and the early images coming out of Bali, and the first reports were pretty sketchy, and you know, they talked about a bomb that had gone off in a nightclub, and some people had been injured. But as you know, obviously, as the news came out of Bali, it turned out to be a lot more than just a couple injured.
Mm. The threat of another bombing or another attack of some kind was there for some time afterwards. Did you get that sense when you were over there photographing what was going on?
Definitely. You know, obviously, a lot of media descended on Bali, and you know, most of the media stayed at the Hard Rock. We didn't stay at the Hard Rock Cafe. We stayed at another smaller hotel away from a lot of the media. I just felt a little unsafe staying with the world's media, so we stayed just down the road. But one of the nights was only about, I think about two, maybe about three or four nights after the bomb, some colleagues and I were having dinner and we heard an explosion. And obviously, you know, everyone jumped up, raced to where we thought the noise came from. And as it turned out, it was just a refrigeration unit, you know, didn't sort of blew up and made a noise. But everyone was, you know, obviously on edge. And, you know, for some time, we're all on edge.
You'd photographed New York after 9/11 the year before. How did you react when you arrived in Bali? Were you prepared for what you saw?
No, I wasn't prepared. New York was a totally different scenario. You know, obviously the scale of New York was massive and nothing we'd ever seen before. But the carnage of Bali was a lot worse than 9/11. You know, there was a lot of rubble and very few people sort of survived and pulled out of the rubble. Whereas Bali, there was a lot of victims in hospital. There was, when we got there, there was still, sadly, a lot of victims still at the scene. Mm. You know, their emergency services were working overtime, but sadly, that they just didn't have the capability to deal with something as big as that, as well as their hospital. You know, the hospital was really an awful place, and their morgue just could not cope with the devastation.
Initially, Nathan, you were going to go just for 2 weeks, but that period just kept getting extended. What stories did you follow after documenting the aftermath of the initial bombing?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's obviously it started, you know, we got there and it was all about the initial bombing. Then it progressed to the families trying to find their loved ones, the hospital, the morgue. And then as, you know, it went in probably a week, maybe 2 weeks, it died down a little bit, and some of the international media left, and then the investigation started to ramp up of, you know, where the bomb was made, detonators, motorcycles, and things like that.
It was an incredibly intense investigation that involved a lot of agreement and a lot of interplay between Indonesian authorities and Australian authorities. What did you observe of that investigation as it progressed?
Yeah, well, the Indonesian authorities worked very closely with, you know, Australian forensics. And the Australian Federal Police sent in a lot of their forensic team to help with the identification of the victims, and also the investigation on what type of bomb, how it happened, where it was made, what it was made from. And I spoke to one of the federal police over there, and they were using high-tech laser mapping systems to map out the whole site, because the site was just rubble and buildings across the road and Paddy's bar were the same. They were just devastated.
It's incredible to think how you can get any sort of evidence from that scene when you actually see the footage of the sites and you say they were rubble.
Yeah, that's right. And the technology and the science behind it is amazing. Just to, and I suppose that's why it took so long. It's such a tedious task to go through everything and try to piece together what happened and who was who and also, you know, the Australians had to work very closely with the Indonesians, you know, to help them through it.
I'm sure that once the initial shock of the bombing was over, you were then faced with trying to document the stories that were coming out. How did Bali start to recover in that period after the initial blasts?
It took a long, long time for Bali to recover, and I'm not really sure it's fully recovered, but...
What was the feeling of locals that you were talking to?
Oh, the Balinese people were beautiful people, and everywhere I went, the interpreter, our fixer, our driver, any cabs I took, any restaurants we went into, they were extremely apologetic, and they couldn't believe someone would do something so terrible to their home. And a lot of Balinese people were killed, and we don't hear a lot about the Balinese people, but they were just extremely apologetic and scared themselves.
Was there a feeling of fear in that initial period afterwards, and how long did that last for?
Yeah, there was a feeling of fear, and a lot of the locals were afraid that there was going to be more attacks. They didn't know what was going to happen, they were scared that maybe more attacks were going to happen, because the information was quite sketchy on how the bomb was created or what type of bomb. At one stage, the Indonesian media reported that it could have been nuclear, which is, you know, it comes from rumour and you know, not from fact.
At what point did investigators start to piece together who might have been responsible?
Oh, it was pretty quick. I think probably 3 weeks after the bombing, you know, we had... They released pictures of what the bombers might have looked like. I can't remember exactly how long it took for them to apprehend someone.
From recollection, Nathan, there was a van, wasn't there, that was used?
Yeah, it was a van and a motorbike. We tracked down with the Balinese police where one of the motorbikes that was used as a detonator, and mobile phones were used, as well as, you know, the phosphorus and diesel and what else it takes to make a bomb.
Mm. When did you leave?
I left about 4 days, less than 3 months later. So we moved from about a month and a half after the bomb, we moved from Bali, the island of Bali, up into Java to Surabaya, and then to a little village called Tenggulun, where Emrozi's parents were and where he sort of schooled and grew up.
What was the feeling in Indonesia once Emrozi was apprehended?
In Bali, the feeling was one of relief. In Java and around Tenggulun and a few other villages, I'm not sure they understood the gravity of what had happened, but it was a little different in Java than it was in Bali.
Did you come face to face with Emrozi?
No, I didn't come face to face with Emrozi. We spent a lot of time at Polda, which is the police station there, where they once they arrested anyone, that's where they'd take them for questioning. No, I didn't come face to face with him.
I mentioned before you're also in New York after the 9/11 attacks. You've also photographed Fijian coups and the Jakarta embassy bombings. How do you deal with what you see? How do you detach yourself from those sorts of images?
Yeah, it's a hard question. I don't think you can ever detach yourself from the images. When you're working, you kind of work on autopilot, and I think the camera acts as a bit of a barrier between you and what's happening. And I suppose one of the key things is as hard as it can be not to get too close to victims or victims' families. In saying that, you know, I went back to New York last year and tracked down 10 firemen that I photographed on the day, and I'm, you know, quite good friends with them now. But look, a lot of journalists in Bali got very close to victims' families, and to the point where they were helping them search for bodies in the morgue. You know, the families weren't allowed in the morgue, but journalists were allowed in the hospital and in the morgue. You know, their media privacy laws are a lot more lax than ours. So for the families looking for somebody, they can't go in, but we're allowed in. So it's a really, really fine line on how far you go.